We once again rededicate our tape recorder, all right, for the sake of Jerry Parker. And I want to caution all of you, as I did some of you, in relationship to the last session that we had, this is going to be a downer the likes of which you have never seen. I cannot do anything near what we did in Mila for Pidgin HaBen. When we finish Pidgin HaBen, we will get to bar mitzvah and bat mitzvah, so life will become a little...
Are you going to teach us
truck? Yeah, that's it. So life will become a little more risque once again. So we'll get back into what the real life cycle of things are. But life cycle has... the cycle has occasionally boring spots, as you well know. And Pidgin HaBen is one of those boring things. I do hear that with the women's movement now, there has been some kind of Pidgin HaBat or whatever. Okay? Those of you who know me know that I have great respect for any of the women's movements. Great respect. As long as they do things with seichel and not utter stupidity. Total stupidity. Bat mitzvah is not a carbon copy of bar mitzvah. There is halachic basis for it. The two times that the women's movement go berserk, in my humble opinion, are when they want to imitate a bris, and when they want and make some kind of initiation ceremony for the young ladies, and without any surgical procedure. And this Pidgin HaBen business. Nope, what can you do? There was no halacha that said that when the Ribbono Shel Olam created the Jews, he didn't he protected them forever from insanity. It's just not true. And that's it. But we'll get a little... We'll be on the upswing when we get to bar mitzvah and bat mitzvah. And I show you some interesting halachic processes there in bat mitzvah and show you how the pendulum of attitude swings when sociological phenomena takes over. Tonight, let's learn a little chumash of what Pidyon HaBen is all about. In your chumash, before you get to the siddur itself, in your chumash is Shmos Yud Gimel.
Oh, by the way, that's the son of Chaim and Bela Davis, my new next door neighbors upstairs. Okay.
In Shmos Yud Gimel Vayidaber Hashem El Moshe Lemar Kadesh Li Kol Bechor. Every and any Bechor is holy to me for my purposes. And Bechor means, there is a legal definition there, Peter. Now you've heard the word Potur. Potur means to be exempt, to be freed of an obligation. Peter, one who has been freed, Kol Rechem, from a womb. And the reason for those words is to indicate that Bechor, the firstborn, has got to be legally defined. And we will see what the legal definition is in terms of what a firstborn means. Is it the father's firstborn? Is it the mother's firstborn? Obviously, you see that the firstborn is slanted here, Peter Kol Rechem, freed from the womb. So we're talking that Pidgin HaBen is activated by the pregnancy of the woman, not of the man. And Bivnei Yisrael, this is among Jews, Bo Adam Uba Behema Lihu. Whether it is man or animal, I get the firstborn. Ayom Moshe, and Moshe says, El Ha'om, if you want to know why, Zachoris Ayom Hazeh, Asher Yitzosem Mitzrayim Mibeis Avodim. The reason for the mitzvah, which I don't always write in my Torah, says Moshe Rabbeinu, is that every time you meet a Bechor, it is a direct remembrance of Zecher Letziat Mitzrayim. Remember the day that you left Mitzrayim. Ki bechozek yodin, was with my strong hand. Otzi Hashem eschem mizeh, that God took you out of Mitzrayim. Vilo yeyachel chametz. And the same reason for Bechor is the same reason that you just observed Pesach and you didn't eat any chametz. Hayom Hazeh, and he told them this mitzvah of Bechor, of the sanctity of Bechor, Hayom Hazeh. I want you to know that today, Yotzim Bechodesh Aviv, you are leaving in the month of spring. So that this mitzvah of Bechor already reverts to pre-Matan Torah, to the times before Har Sinai. He wanted them to know in Mitzrayim that there is an intrinsic connection between what we are required to do with the Bechor, Ba'adam, whether human or behemoth or animals, and what goes on or what went on in Mitzrayim. So the purpose is one of the historical reminding mitzvos, which is no different than tefillin, same reason, no different than mezuzah, no different than eating matzah, no different than abstaining from chometz, no different than observing all of Yom Tov. Every one of these are historical reminders back to Egypt. And it becomes obvious because the last of the ten makos was the severest of makos, the most mortal of plagues, in which every Bechor in Egypt was held responsible for what the Egyptians did to Bnei Israel. Now that's important, because if you follow the Nuremberg trials, if you follow the Eichmann trial, the first line of defense was, it's Hitler's fault. We did what we were told. We were only soldiers in an army. Well, Mitzrayim could have claimed the same thing. My fault. I had a king, I had a paro melech Mitzrayim who insisted that we enslave the Jews. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu responded very simply and methodically that every single family in Mitzrayim had this makkah, this incredible plague of having to deal with makkas bechoras. Every single bechor was held responsible. It was a corporate entity that Mitzrayim was held responsible for. Not one king, but every single family that enslaved, that went along, and that didn't revolt against the king. And therefore, every family in Bnei Israel has got to have a Bechor representative as a historical reminder of that last incident, of that Chozek Yod, that insistence of God. Now, the rest of the Parsha just speaks about Yitzias Mitzrayim, and you come to the very famous Pasuk 8, Pasuk Ches, when we're talking about matzah, eating matzah 7 days, and not eating chometz, v'higadeto lebinecho b'yom ahu. Tell your children on that day, ba'avur zeh, the reason that I'm doing all of this, whether it's bechor, or matzah, or not eating chometz, ba'avur zeh, because of this, asa Hashem li b'tzeisi mi Mitzrayim. That all of these mitzvahs are connected, plugged into the concept of Yitzias Mitzrayim. Now, there is a second reference that is necessary, and that is in Bamidbar, the third Perek Gimel. Midbar Perek Gimel, third Perek, beginning with the 11th Pasuk, Pasuk Yud Aleph. Yeah. Pasuk Yud Aleph. This section of Chumash was obviously written after the Egel HaZahov, after the incident with the golden calf, where every single Shevet except one, every single family except one was implicated in participating, and the only family was Shevet Levi. Their hands were clean. Vayidaber Hashem el Moshe l'mor, another desire of Hashem that is conveyed to Moshe, Pasuk Yud Beis, the 12th Pasuk, Va'ani, as far as I am concerned, says God, Hine lakachti es ha-leviyim, I secluded, took the Leviim mitoch b'nei Yisrael, from among b'nei Yisrael, tachas, instead of kol b'chor petarechem b'nei Yisrael, instead of all the b'chorim, the firstborn, v'hoyu li ha-Leviim, and the Leviim are mine, ki li kol b'chor because ultimately every bechor was for my purpose. Biyom ha'kosi kol bechor be'eretz Mitzrayim, higdashti li kol bechor b'Yisrael mi'adam ad behema li yihiyu ani Hashem. And again, repeating the same thing over and again. I am taking the Levium instead of the Bechorim. I took the Bechorim when I decided that the Bechorim were my lot amongst you when I took you out of Mitzrayim. And the reason that I took the Levium is because the Bechorim muffed it. If you were dedicated unto HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the way you had no choice, but if you were doing your job as a soldier, then you should not have allowed the stampede that B'nai Yisrael created in a huff and a puff, that you were taken out of Mitzrayim and you saw such miraculous things. All of a sudden there's a couple of hours where faith comes to a crisis. Is he alive? Isn't he alive? Is he coming down? Isn't he coming down? A couple of hours you couldn't hold the fort. Just out of suffering, just out of doubt, to wait and see, hold off, and you wait and see. You know, when you have fever all of a sudden, you don't go start popping the pills instantly. You wait and see if your throat is going to get bad. And the same thing here. So you had a problem. A couple of hours, a day would have changed all of history. No, you went along, you panicked. I can't have you as my representatives if that's the case.
But Hashem says, I'll take all the firstborn. What do you mean by take? He will exclude them from amongst the B'nai Israel, and they will be on a higher madrigal than the others? Or
no, you have a responsibility to me. I have thrust a responsibility on you that you are to be my personal representative throughout the nation, family by family, mishpocha by mishpocha, to be my teachers unto that family unit.
Meaning then that if he did not choose Shem and Levi, then at the time of Beit HaMikdash, they would have been the...
Without question, that's it. That was the original intention. But how can you be a teacher of the message of HaKadosh Baruch Hu when in a couple of hours you panic the way you do? You forfeit the right to be a teacher, because the first requirement of a teacher is to teach by example, by inspiration. Go. What's going to be? Your great grandchildren are going to ask you, what did you do when they made the Egel Hazor? You danced around it? So you'll say you made a mistake. But there are certain mistakes that create such blemishes that you can't erase. They just, somehow the stench never goes away. But interestingly enough, the Gemara speaks about an interesting halacha. Your responsibility in the Beis HaMikdash has been given over to whom? To Levi. But your Kedusha, your ultimate Kedusha still remains as a Bechor. I can't take that away from you, because once I've pinned you to be holy and special, Kodosh, I give it to you. You forfeited it. So it's only in the Beis HaMikdash that you won't appear before me. Someone else will have to sing. Someone else will have to do the Karbanos. That's going to be Shevet Levi. Okay? But a Bechor is still Kodosh. And Kodosh until there is a sense of Pidyon. Until the debt is squared away some which way. For if you are supposed to do certain mitzvahs, if you have to do certain responsibilities, and you cannot do them for whatever extenuating circumstance, shlucho shel odom kemoso, you can therefore delegate a shliach, you can delegate an agent. Well, and just to go back on that point to Bris, it is the obligation of a father to mala, to circumcise a child. You don't know how to do it. So you can have your delegate, your shliach, and that's the mala. It is an obligation for every Jew to write a Sefer Torah. To write a Sefer Torah. It's the last mitzvah of the 613 mitzvahs. You know how to write a Torah? Okay? So you can delegate someone, your shliach, to go ahead and do it. You cannot go ahead and perform B'dikas Chometz, let's say, for whatever reason. You are in Florida, and your home is in Passaic. You can't do B'dikas Chometz. You can delegate someone and be your shliach to go ahead and do bdikas chametz. Because of this juridical, this halachic principle of shlucho shel adam kamoso, the power of attorney. But here, you forfeited the right to be a bechor before HaKadosh Baruch Hu. But out of the chesed of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, he didn't take away the kedusha. He wanted the principle of bechor to be remembered forever among Bnei Yisrael. Ultimately, because it is a zecher l'tzias Mitzrayim, the makas bechoras. The bechor has certainly is dealt with differently, without question. What's the most obvious? Huh? Yerusha. Sure. The din of Yerusha, the din of inheritance. A halachic will gives to a bechor twice that of anyone else. Okay?
Let's say the same example, the first 30 days.
Yeah.
He probably has a much, much higher level.
What?
No?
No.
Once you redeem back.
Absolutely not. The reason that 30 days, and we'll explain it a little later, the reason of 30 days is because you don't know if that child is going to survive. We establish a chazoka. A chazoka means an assumption that the child is probably going to survive if he makes it through 30 days. Okay? After a bris, the medical problems, there could be many complications. But once we've reached the 30-day mark, then we assume that it's going to survive. Therefore, we go ahead and perform Pidyon HaBen. But it isn't a lessening of Kedusha by Pidyon HaBen. Okay? There is still responsibility there, but the Bechor's hands are tied because HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, okay, in this one respect, standing before me in the Beis HaMikdash, you will no longer be able to be qualified. Everything else that I had intended for you, that you have to carry on. But so you see carefully that all of this is plugged in to Yitzias Mitzrayim. And probably because Yitzias Mitzrayim is so central to everything that we do, you cannot erase the Bechorim. Can you imagine if you... Alright, so they muffed it at the Golden Calf at Egel Azob. So you want to erase the Bechorim. Do you know what you do? You do violence to the Eser Makos. To the day that we went out of Yitzias Mitzrayim. And probably this is the reason that it still has to stay. Because the whole scheme of Yitzias Mitzrayim is demonstrated. The finality I'm talking about in Yitzias Mitzrayim is demonstrated by Kiddush Bechorim, by sanctifying the Bechorim, plus everything and anything else, such as matzah and chomitz and mezuzah and tefillin. We wouldn't go ahead and erase any of those, so I can't erase it. But I got a technicality, because they muffed it. So one aspect goes to the Leviim, and that's it. Now, if you just take a look at the last bit of Chumash, and Bamidbar Yud Ches. Bamidbar Yud Ches. Pasuk Tezvov, the 15th pasuk. Kol Peter Rechem. Got it? Pasuk 15. Bamidbar Numbers 18, verse 15. That's the English side. Got it?
I have it.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry. I didn't. Kol Peter Rechem. Every firstborn lechol basar, that is animal, asher yakrivu l'Hashem, animal which is sacrificed to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, but also Odom, and also Behema, man and animal, Yihyeloch, will belong to you, in other words, the Kohanim. Ach padot tifdeh es bechor ha'adam. But remember that there is a process of pidyon. The process of pidyon is a very sublime concept. Okay, pidyon means to redeem. redemption. Pidyon means to redeem. Now, let's put redemption in its true perspective. Unfortunately, the only true-to-life explanation that I can give you is you own something, you want to turn it into cash in a pawn shop. You have a ticket that says you are responsible to return the cash. You redeem that pawn ticket. You redeem that item. Simple as that. And it is based on responsibility. Responsibility meaning that you got something for your item, which is yours, and no two ways about it. And the only way that you can once again have it for you and for your unrestricted use is by redeeming it, by fulfilling the obligation that is necessary. And here, a bechor, the firstborn of a mother, does not belong to the mother. It is sanctified, it is dedicated, it is obligated to God's work. You want it? And you're going to have to redeem that bechor unto yourself. Because ultimately, someone has to fulfill that obligation. Okay, so we have someone who's going to fulfill the obligation, someone from Shevet Levi instead. But you have to pay for that obligation that's fulfilled. That's what redemption means. But you have a problem. In the middle of the pasuk still, Ach pado sifteh, you must redeem es bechor ha'adam, the human bechor, the es bechor ha'behemah ha'temeah tifteh. You also have to redeem a behemah that's tmeah, a behemah that you cannot sacrifice, such as the donkey. And then Rashi in the Medrash asks, why should the donkey specifically be kadosh? Okay? And again, it is plugged into Mitzrayim. In Nevi'im, several times, Mitzrayim is described as a bunch of jackasses. Chamor. Simple as that. Because if there was ever a nation that could have motivated the Jews to do the same thing with honey, rather than with the vinegar that they dealt with, they dealt us, it was Mitzrayim. What an incredible jackass. Shem Mitzrayim kruim chamorim. And when you have yourself a beast of burden, such as a donkey, the bechor, when you take a look at it, you remember the whole of Yetzias Mitzrayim. But you can't take a donkey and sacrifice it to on the Mizbeach. So again, this pidyon. You take a donkey and you substitute a sheep, and a seh can be brought to the Beis HaMikdash. And Pasuk Yud Zayin, I'm sorry, Pasuk Tezayin, Upeduyav, Mi Ben Chodesh Tifdeh. When do you redeem? Mi Ben Chodesh. Mi Ben Chodesh. What is a Chodesh?
A month.
Who says a month is 30 days? Okay? Let's wait, and we'll come back to it. Okay, is it? We'll soon see. We'll see. Okay? Ufiduyav mi ben chodesh tifdeh. You start redeeming when it is a month old. Be'erkecha, and the value is kesef chamesh shkalim b'shekel ha'kodesh. Has got to be kesef, which is money, but it also means silver. And it is 5 shekel b'shekel ha'kodesh, according to the shekelim that we use in the Beis HaMikdash, which includes an amount, each shekel includes esrim gerahu, 20 gerah of silver. And I'll translate that, obviously, into what today is. That's about it. However, the chor shor, the oldest of the oxen, the first of the oxen, or b'chor chesed, or a sheep who is a b'chor, or b'chor eiz, or a goat. Lo tifdeh, there is no process of kodesh over there. There's no process of redemption. Kodesh heim, they are to remain holy. As damam tizrok al hamizbeach, and they have to be brought as a korban, as a sacrifice. Ve'es chelbom taktir ishe l'reach nicholach Hashem. That's it. Obviously, u'bisaram, the next pasuk, the meat, yihi yeloch, goes to the kohen, etc., and so forth. But a human Bechor has to be redeemed, and a chamor, a donkey, has to be redeemed, because you cannot go ahead, you are precluded by other reasons from going ahead and making a korban out of them. You're not allowed to make human korbanos, and you cannot take a jackass and put it on the mizbeach. Yes?
The meat here, as if they're not redeemed because it is holy.
Mm-hmm.
Does that mean that because we have to redeem ourselves that they are not holy now? Because what
no. No.
They need not be redeemed Kodesh Hashem, they're holy.
So, if technically the other two Bechorim, in other words, the Chamor and the Adam, could be sacrificed, if technically we could do that, then there should be a korban on the Mizbeach. But that becomes offensive to the rest of the system of korbanos.
Right.
So what am I left with? I'm left with only three others. I'm left with three others, which is the Shor, and the Kesef, and the Eis, which can become korbanos. And that's what we call Matnos Kehuna. Simple as that.
Really, it should be more that they are also holy.
Yeah, no question. All right. So much for the Chumash. Let's get to Sidurim. You can and you may.
It says, with the first pasuk, it says yeah. From the womb. Is that where they get that? It's got to be a vaginal.
Oh, hold on. Yeah. Everything, the reason I learned these pieces of Chumash either, the reason I took you through this piece of Chumash is to show you how halachas are derived from every word. Now, in the Siddur, just prepare
749.
Most of them around also. 749. Yeah. Everyone have? Just prepare them. And here's where I'll have to tax your patience at this point, because there is absolutely no text whatsoever other than the original Shulchan Aruch that gives you the halachas in systematized form of what Pidyon HaBen is. I don't know. I think maybe Art Scroll did publish Pidyon HaBen, but I personally don't own the entire series, so that's why I can't put it in front of you. I certainly don't have multiple copies of it. But if they do have it, and you're a candidate for Pidyon HaBen, so you know, pays to have it, gives you everything. What? Not you?
No one
in
Washington.
Oh, all right.
Well, you have to hope for your grandchildren, not gonna
have. All right, let's get to it. Question number one: who needs a Pidyon HaBen? And the answer is a mother's natural firstborn son. Has nothing to do with the father, almost. That's the rule. There are exceptions to that rule. A mother's natural firstborn son.
The father had children from another marriage?
It has nothing to do with it.
Nothing at all
but
to do with it.
Also from the Kohen and the Levite.
Well, we'll start whittling it down. Okay? Now we start whittling it down. Because Shevet Levi is implicated in this process of redemption of the firstborn, okay? So you cannot redeem from the one who is the one to do the redeeming. The Bechor is the passive, redemptive one. The Kohen, or the Shevet Levi, is the active redeemer, so to speak. So if you are a Kohen, if you are a Levi, if you are a Kahenes, mother is a Bas Kohen, or a Levia, mother is a Bas Levi, save yourself a mint and a line of tzaras after the bris. It's okay, you know, it just kind of crawls up on you. You're just getting out of the hospital. So you got the bris. You have to go through the trauma of the bris. Because you didn't have the training, you know, that some of us had over here, okay? And you have the trauma of the bris, and you have a couple of sleepless nights until you healed, and then all of a sudden things start to get back to normal, and boom, you got to make yourself a party. You don't have the strength for it, but nonetheless, if you're a Bas Kohen, if you're a Bas Levi, if you're a Kohen or a Levi.
Does it have to be a party? I mean.
No, no, it doesn't have to. The only thing is that it has been associated, since it is a mitzvah in the Torah, and we learned it. It's called a sudas mitzvah. It's certainly as much a mitzvah as a bar mitzvah. It's as much a mitzvah as Sheva Brothers.
He went to a Sephardic and that was like a wedding. I mean, we didn't have it that big.
There were over 100 people.
But they had like 300 people abandoned and they had diamonds.
No, are you kidding? Well, they silver tray and everyone had a ticket. Yeah, my husband, Alan, figured it out on the computer. And it came out that one, it only comes out, the chances of someone having to make an actual pinel bed between the bas kohen, bas levi, kohen levi, or cesarean section or any other thing, comes out to only like 1 in 1,000 births.
1 in 1,000?
It's very high. And my sister and I both have it.
Okay.
My poor mother.
Let's continue. Who is obliged to do the pinel bed? And obviously it's the father. If the father, for some strange reason, doesn't want to, or is not around, for whatever reason, the child himself, upon reaching majority, in other words, after becoming bar mitzvah, is obligated to redeem himself. The question comes up as far as the mother is concerned. Okay, let the mother have a shot at it. And there's a halachic problem, there's a technicality over there. You see, any mitzvah that you do, you have to be obligated to do it yourself. If you're doing it on behalf of your child. So, halacha is in dispute, and generally we say that if the child can do it himself upon reaching majority, then the mother doesn't have to do it. And it's the same technicality with can women do brisen? Can they perform circumcisions? Okay, now theoretically, the maaseh, the requirement is a certain technical act and finish. But today, having culled through all of the halachic sources, the attitude is, well, wait a minute. If you do a mitzvah, it should be that you are in a position to do it yourself, and you're only an agent. You're only a shaliach. No, so. Women do not have a procedure of circumcision, so it's on that basis they say no, women should not be moalim. The exception is obviously Moshe's wife Zipporah. When he postponed, you know, she took up the cudgels to fight God's war, and she went ahead and did what she had to do. But that's the exception of the rule. Not, you don't go ahead.
What did your father say about that?
And my mother for the first time joined him. But I'm telling you, let's go on. But there are some strange situations besides this 1 in 1,000, from your point of view, that you'd probably never think of. A gal comes and she decides she no longer wants to be an Irish Catholic. She wants to convert, Gioris. And I convert her because I think she's right. She's on the right course. And she tells me, as one convert did, I'm pregnant. Okay? The pregnancy takes place, the conception of the pregnancy takes place
before
she's at Bas Yisrael. The birth will be when she is already converted, and by definition then anyone that she gives birth to is a Yehudi, is a Yisrael, is a Jew. Do you need a pidyon haben? The answer is you need a pidyon haben. But why? Because the definition is peter rechem. Okay, it isn't when conception took place, it is when the birth has taken place and the womb has freed the first child. Simple as that. What about a ger?
I mean, he is...
Can't be a kohen.
No, but no. Once he converts,
no.
He's the first of the... You know, he's Avram ben Avram.
He's Avram ben Avram, but he's not the Bechor. It goes with the mother. It goes with the mother. That the definition is the mother, and that's why in the pasuk we learned Bechor, and immediately after Peter Rechem. to determine that it's not the father's bechor, it's not you, but it reverts back to the situation of the mother. Second case. It's entirely, incredibly conceivable today. She's not married, never was married. And the father of her child is a goy. This is her first birth. She carries to term and she keeps the child.
A pagan, because he's Jewish anyway, because the mother.
That's it. Petarechen. Finish. You have to have a pidyon haben. Question. Now you see where the mother comes in as far as the pidyon is concerned. There is no father. What am I going to do? Stand the guy up and say, here, make a pidyon haben for your child? It's not. There is none. So this is where the mother comes into the question. What do you do? She has to bring him.
But in that case, it would be better for two ways.
That's an option. That is an option, though. And that's where that halacha comes up. Do we go ahead and say the mother should do it? So the answer is that the Bezdin, if you have a Bezdin of Rabbonim in town, that they have, they stand in loco parentis in place of a parent. Or you go ahead. Next. This is something that just occurred, that was just asked of me 7 o'clock, but in a different context. You have a gal who went through a war, who went through a Holocaust. Does not remember ever hearing from her parents or ever learning from her parents about what her personal status is. In other words, Kohen Levi Yisrael. She may be a Kohen, a Bas Kohen. Does her child need a pidyon haben? No. If you're a Bas Kohen, don't need it. If she doesn't know. But she may yet be a Bas Kohen. So we have the suffix. If she doesn't know, what do we do?
The suffix on the right, so you have to go
to
the other. Hold it. When we are dealing here with doubts about things that are in Chumash, in the Torah, the Doraisa, we usually are more stringent. We go to the stringent point of view. And stringently, we should do what? We should
What? No pigeon.
You say yes pigeon or no pigeon? Yes pigeon. You say no pigeon to be stringent. Now argue the case between the two of you. Why, if you are more stringent, no pigeon?
I would say yes pigeon because this is a mitzvah say. This is not, that's what you have to, now if you aren't going to do. If it says you will give him a pigeon, then that's the mitzvah. You can the mitzvah.
Yeah? What do you say? Say it clearly. I can't verbalize it. If we are dealing with something in Chumash and we are doubtful whether the mitzvah applies, you don't play around and do it. You don't make phony, fake ceremonies. That's what you're saying? Well, you work a hard day.
Took the words right out of my mouth.
Okay. That's the halacha is very simple, however. There is no pidyon haben. You know why? Because of what you said. If in good times, when we know the statistical chances are what, 1 in 1,000, who knows what kind of exponent we are dealing with here, 1 in God knows how many thousands, that she may be the daughter of a Kohen or the daughter of a Levi. And therefore, when we are dealing with brachas and we are dealing with d'oraisa, you're not going to give me phony. You know what I'm saying? So it's based on the principle of chazaka, of simple rove. What are the statistical possibilities? Rove. That the wildest chances are that she may be a Bas Kohen, or she may
because
be a Bas
Kohen. Because the robe is strong.
What do you do in the next generation? Let's say if she has a daughter who has a bechor, and she doesn't know because her mother didn't know, what do you do then? But then it can go on and on.
It can go on and on and on. And probably what is probably what's going to happen is in the second generation already they'll do it. Probably in the second or the third generation.
Well, wouldn't it depend on who the father of the child would be in the second generation?
And we're assuming it's going to be Yisrael.
Yeah.
The father is. We're going to assume it's going to be Yisrael. It's not going to be a Kohen. They're not going to be a Levi. Yeah, everything fits in so neatly. If she marries a Kohen, or if she, or if the next generation marries a Kohen or a Levi, it's not. You know. All right. Let's take now. Oh, by the way, interestingly enough, as I said, just today, a little after 7, I was called. Among our Russian study program, we had a very big tragedy this morning. One of the women started out to come and didn't arrive because she collapsed and she expired. And the leader of the study program made the arrangements for the funeral. Aside from the shock and everything, a son-in-law of hers, who lives here in town also, tells this Reboruch, who's the coordinator, you know, when I was a kid, my father died in the war, and when I was a kid, an old religious Jew told me that I'm not supposed to go to cemeteries. The only vestige that he ever knew about being a Kohen. And the Shiloh was, well, what do you do? You know, what do you do? Here, they all came together, the family survived together, they're three generations under one roof. And tell him you cannot go to your mother-in-law's funeral tomorrow, or what, and so on and so forth. So it just tonight, I mean, if last week we had the class, I couldn't tell you. So it happens. It happens as a matter of course in war that people just don't know. His son-in-law's father and mother did not survive the war. He was a youngster. He's in his 40s now. He was a tiny kid and an old
but
that man.
That he remembered.
Yeah, only thing.
And you know,
nothing
that's
else.
That's what we hear from many of the people who come to us.
That's it.
That's one of the questions they ask. If they don't know to what extent their Judaism comes, they come forgiven.
Did your father go to a funeral? Did he walk when he go in the cemetery?
When you go into the cemetery, yeah.
When you walk into
the
cemetery.
That's it. Let's move on to the last shady situation. The issue of a mamzer, which is a child born of father and mother who, according to the Torah, have no right to be married. And nonetheless, whichever way they did it, they got married. Child is born, child is called a mamzer. You need a pigeon a bit. The answer is yes. Because there are no sanctions against a mamzer other than the sanction of mamzer. If he wanted to become a Kohen Gadol, he could become a Kohen Gadol.
It's not his fault.
That's right. Understand?
Wanted
to become a Kohen Gadol, he could become a Kohen Gadol. Simple as that. Okay.
But I thought that a mamzer is not permitted to marry another Jew.
No.
They have to.
Another Muslim.
Another mamzer. A mamzer.
Or a convert.
Okay. Good. That we will leave. I will address that whole situation when we get to Chuppah Kiddushin. When we get to, you know, when we move on after Bar Mitzvah, then we'll go on. But needs a pigeon aben. No two ways about it. Next question. When? And I'm happy, Giveret Natalie, that you said what you did. We learned that it has to be Ben Chodesh, a month. And I asked you then, how long is a month? How long is a month? How many days?
Anywhere from 28 to 31.
There you are. The legal definition of a Torah month is 29 and a quarter days. Okay? So if that's the case, a month after a 29 and a quarter days, on the 30th day already, you can make the pigeon aben. Or is it 30 days? Okay, because some months are full 30 days, depending on the moon. Because, how do we figure that? The part of a day is the equivalent of a full day. And you know, Mitzvah Sayom Kekulo, the most blatant example is, let's say, for Shiva. If you start Shiva at 2 o'clock in the afternoon,
right,
and the day only has 3 hours or 4 hours left, those 4 hours are the equivalent of a full day. The seventh day, anything, 10 minutes, 10 minutes, 5 minutes. Helen Starshevsky's mother sat down right before Shabbos when she learned that she lost a sister. 5 minutes before lighting candles, boom, that was the first day. That's it. The seventh day of Shiva. an hour in the morning, and finishes the equivalent of a whole day. So here's where we run into a problem. What is a chodesh? What is a month? Is it 29 and a quarter days? Or if we use the principle of part of a day is the equivalent of one day, then we have to wait 30 days, the 30th day. And this is a machlokas of the poskim, a disagreement that we don't solve, but I'm telling you clearly that you'll see it in the Siddur. It's on beginning the 31st day. It's page 749 in the middle. The Pidyon HaBen is performed on the 31st day after birth, which means 30 days have elapsed, and that's about it. There is a shaila, however. What if you have a kohen who's able to come on the 30th day, cannot be there for the 31st day? How would you pass it?
That you
under such duress, but you can't. One Greenland, Iceland, Newfoundland. Okay. All right.
Okay.
Yeah. All right. What do you do? Cannot come in on the 31st day, but will be there on the 30th day. So here you have the very interesting situation. At least if I were confronted with it, that we can rely on those that say it has to be 29 and a quarter days. That is a month. So do it on the 30th day. Do it on the 30th day. And you would do it with a technicality. You know, if the 31st day is what you need, and you know what you can do on the 30th day? You can say to the Kohen, listen, Kohen, I am redeeming my son.
But he's still yours till tomorrow.
And it is effective on the 31st day. Here is the 5 silver dollars, and it's effective on the 31st day. Okay? Totally legal. Night is the 31st day already. That's okay.